This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
Rabble.ca.
Hi, I'm Wayne McPhail, and I was one of the people that originally started the Rabble Podcast Network, and I think that you should support the Rabble Podcast Network and Rabble.ca because there's no other place where you're going to get such a diversity of voices speaking truth to power.
The Rabble Podcast Network is 10 years old this year. Show your support by going to rabble.ca/donate.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
The Papua New Guinea Constitution protects customary land rights, and there is virtually no private land ownership. Land is almost entirely controlled by clans and tribes. Yet, even with these legal protections, a massive land rush has taken place in the country. In recent years, land has been leased out to foreign corporations. Dozens of companies have signed land deals, so that now PNG is the world's largest exporter of tropical wood. However, a recent court decision overturned some of those leases. Frederick Mousseau is a policy director at the Oakland Institute. He's also the author of the report, The Great Timber Heist, and he's joined me by phone this morning to discuss logging in Papua New Guinea. Hello, Frederick.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me.
Welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
So, what did the court rule?
Basically, the most important decision is a Supreme Court ruling that that took the side of the people against a logging company that was appealing a judgment by a national court, and it is very significant because the national the logging company was appealing to the Supreme Court to go against the announcements of the government that he could cancel this SABL land leases. This is a scheme that has allowed 5 million hectares to be leased in the recent years with some kind of loophole that was created in the forestry regulation.
So this is one of 70 possible leases that could be challenged. So it's quite significant that the Supreme Court has ruled this.
Yes, and it was a prominent one, a big one. I mean, they are not all the same size in this 70 leases. What we know also is that the government set up in 2011 a commission of inquiry with some very prominent personalities and judges in Papua New Guinea. And they looked into these leases, these 70 leases, and their conclusion that most of them should be considered illegal and lawful. And they put this in their report that was published in 2013. And nothing has happened since 2013, unfortunately, despite the government's announces and promises that it will return the land. So we could hope that with the Supreme Court taking this stand, the government will finally implement the promises he has made a few years ago to the people to say, okay, let's cancel all of them now and return the land and go back to what people have always wanted, which is to keep the customary land in their hands.
So even though the Constitution protects the land and says it is in customary, in other words, in joint traditional use, then the government went ahead and signed leases with foreign companies. How did that come about?
Yeah, that's interesting. And it's interesting to know also why the Constitution has provides this guarantee of customary land belonging to the people. Because this is a country that got independence quite late compared to the rest of the developing world. It was in 1975 only. And the fathers of the Constitution learned from what happened in Africa and elsewhere on the neo-colonialism that was taking place. And they found it was very important to put in this Constitution this customary land rights, like all our land belongs to our people and to all our tribes. And it's really collective ownership of the land, which means that for whatever to happen, you have to decide as a community, which is very important because all the country is still mostly rural and is still mostly organized as local communities speaking altogether 800 different languages. So this was this is key. This is key for the life of the people and their livelihoods and their social culture. Everything in their life depends on these customary land rights. And the government found a way to bring development. Say, okay, these people, they can't do anything with this customary land rights. They don't accept foreign investors. We can't take this land, so we need to find a way. And the way is a complicated scheme, which is a lease-back scheme. So basically, they rely on small straw men from the communities, who are generally some educated people who have access to the capital and government ministries, and the strike deals pretending to do that on behalf of communities, and they sign papers with government officials and with companies, and they are those at the end of the day who allow this scheme to move forward, even if according to the customary land rights, all the communities should be consulted and give their agreement. It's actually usually a couple of people using some kind of fraudulent mandates from the people that strike this deal and get the benefit and the money from it.
Now, I think you mentioned earlier that there's something called SABLES, or Special Agriculture and Business Leases. Is that the loophole that has been used to get access to this land?
Yeah, this is the kind of scheme that is used, and basically the loophole that was created by a change in the law for SABLs in 2007 allowed logging companies to say, because the country has already a few million hectares under logging concessions, and the logging companies are looking for more. And what the government and the parliament gave the logging companies with this loophole was to say, okay, you can say you're going to do agricultural development, and you send a lease for agricultural development, and then it makes it much easier to proceed without having all kind of regulations around permits and forestry and customary land rights regulations. So basically, what has been happening is that logging companies pretending to do agricultural development got this land and went into logging and destroying all this forest.
So has Papua New Guinea, have Papua New Guineans benefited economically from these leases?
No, it's clearly not the case. And we, during our work and our previous studies, we went also to see what has happened even when there's some project happening with palm oil, for instance. And we've seen places with palm oil projects which have been there for decades. And there's no development from palm oil, where most of the benefits go out, and people are really, they are transformed into farmers who used to live with a very wealth of livelihood and environment, producing diversity of crops and with no malnutrition. You see people turn into farm workers who are low paid, who are completely dependent on what the company decides to give them as a price. It's really shocking to see the life in the plantations, and this is what is promised for the lucky ones who will have an agricultural project, because for the others it's just logging, and logging you will have some money given to a few individuals in the community, as I said, but at the end of the day, no services, no infrastructure. It's really nothing happening for the people. It's a big theft. It's a big theft. It's one third of the country today in the hands of in foreign hands, mostly logging companies, with the government really not taking any decision to support the people, and people who are looking for ways to fight back. Legal battle is one. There's a lot of mobilization taking place, but it's really hard because most of the time, government, police, and justice side with the loggers instead of siding with their own people. And this is why we're celebrating this first big court decision that takes finally the side of the people.
The wood that's coming out of Papua New Guinea, the tropical wood, must have a tremendous value on world markets.
It is. It's a very valuable tropical wood, and it is, talking about the benefits, it is also another scandal. In the scandal is that the logging companies and they declare the price of the wood they harvest and the quantity they harvest, so they don't pay taxes or pay less taxes on the on their activities and on the exports. And what we have seen in our two different research pieces and which we have exposed in our reports is really a laundering scheme for this tropical wood, because they use a number of screen companies that import, export, log. It's impossible to understand how the whole thing works. But what we see is a timber company in Papua New Guinea would send to another one an importer in Malaysia that will export then to China. The wood will be then processed and then re-exported to Europe or to North America as a furniture or other form of wood product. And so it's really an international laundering scheme that we see with millions and billions, possibly billions of dollars involved, and very little benefit for the people, but also very little control and understanding of what's happening from governments. And even Interpol has been trying to put its finger into it, because it's something really big happening as a mafia kind of scheme.
You said there'd been a lot of mobilization on the ground against the leases. Is that what has led to the Supreme Court decision?
People have mobilized peacefully in general, and what they are facing is repression by the police. Local police forces are generally hired by the logging companies, and they go arrest or beat the people, and people then are scared or have to hide, this is this kind of repression. But it doesn't make headlines, because you know, Papua New Guinea is this country with little infrastructure. There's little news coverage. People, communities are really isolated. So we know it's happening because, fortunately, now there are cell phones and we can get the news here in the U.S. when something is happening in a small village somewhere, when they have the network. But most of the time, it doesn't make the news to the national headlines. Not mentioning that the largest newspaper in the country is also owned by the largest logging company, which is a Malaysian company called Ribun and Ejo. And the control of the media is also an issue in the country. What we can think from the decision of the Supreme Court is more that it recognized what has been said by the Commission of Inquiry, a number of elements brought by the Commission showing that these illegal land leases were illegal, and it certainly we hope also that the exposure we've had in previous months over the past year of the corrupt system involving tax evasion, involving false manipulation of accounts and false declarations by these logging companies, and at the end of the day, no development for the country and no benefit for the country. We hope that this has helped too, because there was a lot of outrage around that, and a lot of there's been big mobilization in the universities, with students being shocked with the level of corruption in the country. So what I would guess is that this might have had more importance because it's happening in urban settings. It's something that is discussed in parliament, in the news, and it might have some more influence. And unfortunately, the local mobilization in villages is invisible for the people in the capital.
Well, thanks very much for speaking to me this morning, Frederick, and I'll refer people to your report so they can read more about it.
Thank you so much for having us.
I've been speaking with Frederick Musso. He is policy director at the Oakland Institute and also author of the report, The Great Timber Heist, The Logging Industry in Papua New Guinea. And you can read that report at oaklandinstitute.org.